I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Bill Green was sworn in as the chairman of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission earlier this week and has his work cut out for him. The school district still faces a funding shortfall after a budget crisis last year that led to layoffs and cutbacks. There has been little progress on the teachers' contract that ran out in August. And most importantly, something has to be done to raise achievement levels for all the students who attend the city's public and charter schools. Bill Green resigned his job on Philadelphia City Council, where he was elected councilman at large in 2007. He joins us on Radio Times to talk about his vision for education for the city, how he proposes to address some of the problems facing the district. And Bill Green, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And you have said that the teacher's contract is really your top priority. It expired in August. How are you going to jumpstart negotiations?
Well, I'm not part of the negotiating team, but certainly we are setting the policy at the SRC level about what's acceptable and what's not. And I think the important thing about the teacher's contract is that it's not about money only. We have to be able to compete with the educational alternatives that are available to parents in Philadelphia, more specifically charter schools, on a level playing field in terms of the number of hours that are worked by teachers, the length of the school day, the length of the school year, remediation on Saturdays for children who need additional help, the feedback loop that teachers get, et cetera. And those are, to me, more important than the monetary terms, although, of course, we have to, unfortunately, have both. And, you know, typically, where there have been concessions along the lines of the kind of reforms I'm talking about, the districts have had to pay the teachers for that. And it's just not possible in Philadelphia. So we are asking an awful lot, but unfortunately we have to get it in order to be able to do our job.
The School Reform Commission actually has powers under Act 46 essentially to impose a contract. Would you be willing to do that?
Rather than discuss any specific strategy that we would take, I will just say I fully intend to use, if we can't reach an accommodation, all of the powers available to us under state law.
And as you said, part of the accommodation has to do with work rules. Some of it has to do with benefits. Some of it having to do with teacher pay as well. We've had teachers either call into the show or be guests on the show. Many of them, you know, paying out of pocket to ensure that children in their classrooms get the tools, the skills that they need. And some of them feeling as if, you know, we didn't cause this problem. Why are we being asked to pay for it?
Well, they didn't cause the problem, but every adult in the system is has some responsibility for where we are today. That's, you know, the old SRC and past CEO. That is every single person, adult in a school, and the people who represent them, whether it's the principals or the teachers, et cetera. And unfortunately, everybody is going to have to deal with the problem, whether or not they specifically cause them. We have a ton of great teachers in this city and a ton of great schools. And what we're asking is unfair, but we have to have it. There's just no alternative. It's outrageous that teachers have to bring their own supplies. And, you know, we're going to see what we can do about that. We did some fundraising last year to help with that. And you know, in the end, we have no choice but to kind of reset and start over.
And what the district, I guess, is looking for is something like $100 million in givebacks over a five-year period.
That's correct.
And that's what you're looking
for? It's actually $100 million a year.
A year?
Yes.
Over a five-year period?
Yes, so $500 million over 5 years.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I know when you were on city council, there are efforts to get a liquor tax, a cigarette tax, I mean, to find other sources of revenue. How come we don't have that yet? Wasn't sure how to ask
I can't
that.
Answer that question. I voted for the liquor tax. It would mean $90 million to us. The cigarette tax. It would mean $90 million to us next year, declining over time as the black market for cigarettes grew in Philadelphia. But it would be very helpful to get it. It could not get through the General Assembly in its place. They gave us a 1% sales tax, so we can get $120 million a year from that revenue source. That is passed in the state, and it needs to now get through my former colleagues in city council.
Governor Corbett selected you to chair the School Reform Commission. Do you share his view, his approach to education in Pennsylvania?
Well,
and he supports charters, he supports vouchers, programs like that?
I think I'm very aligned with the administration on educational policy. I have two policy papers I wrote in 2010 and 2011, which are 60 pages and 40 pages or something like that. And so my views were well known by the administration before I ever went up and talked to them. So I would say, based on my conversations and discussions with his team, that we are very aligned.
Well, I'm reading a quote from the paper you wrote in December 2011. Philadelphia public schools should be governed by two separate entities. A new statewide school reform entity similar to Louisiana's Recovery School District that focuses solely on taking over and turning around failing schools across the state, and a locally appointed Board of Education.
Yep. And obviously that's not going to happen. here I am.
That was a couple of years ago.
And it was also out of the frustration of what I consider to be wasting of almost $1 billion federal dollars over a three-year period, where I could not get the district to focus on the things that I wrote in my 2010 paper that were data and evidence-based approaches to reforming our schools, what should happen to improve outcomes for kids. And that SRC and that CEO that inspired the 2011 paper were very frustrating to most of us in city government. And I felt like if we couldn't get them to do what I believe to be the right thing, that we ought to go around them. fortunately for me and my in the position I'm in today, the SRC actually has the authority to do exactly what is described in that paper. We can create, for example, an independent school district if we want to, with all of the failing schools in it, and focus different energy, attention, and funding there than we have the rest of the schools in the system. So that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility over the next few years.
Do you think the state should give Philadelphia school district more money?
Well, as I always said when I was on city council, budgeting is choosing between ideas for good with the limited resources that are available, and we're a big state. They are making the choices that they make, which we can try to influence, and we will or will not be able to influence that. The same thing at the city level. They will decide how much they give us. We will then take the resources that are provided and try to allocate them in a way that really moves Dr. Height and his team's Action Plan 2.0 forward, which, because of the resources we're going to get, will be on a school-by-school basis. What school needs help? Where can we have the most impact with the dollars available, et cetera?
But do you think it makes sense for a district like Philadelphia, a very high poverty rate? You were saying something like 85% of the children who go to schools in Philadelphia are poor.
Yes.
Is there any other city in the state that's close to that you know of?
Reading, Chester, the Chester Upland School District. I think Allentown may be very similar. They're smaller. Pittsburgh, obviously, has similar challenges. So there are a few of us. And then there's also many rural districts that are in a similar situation. And so there are a lot of people across Pennsylvania who would like to see a different funding formula, and a bill has been introduced, and I think there'll be a commission maybe to study that, if not this year, next year.
And I would think districts, Philadelphia, Reading, all the ones that you named, everyone would want a stable source of money, so that every year isn't this scramble to try to figure out what a budget is.
Well, we know we have a stable source of funding. We didn't do the proper planning in 2010 when our budget was close to $3 billion. It's now about 2.4 because of loss of federal funding and other state funding. But we know what our budget is going to be, and we know that we can't accomplish everything we want to accomplish with the current level of resources. So That is part of our job.
Well, Superintendent William Height just earlier this week announced a plan to make schools places where children can learn. I mean, everything that's on paper is really inspiring and be hard to argue with it. Yesterday, he announced that he would need $320 million in order to make this happen. Can the SRC, can the district find that kind of money?
We can't find any money. In other words, we don't have taxing authority, so we are dependent upon the state, the local, and federal governments for the resources that we have, and we try to allocate them as efficiently as possible. But it is part of our job over the next I hold the position that I have for 5 years, over 5 years, to try to get us in a place where we can implement Action Plan 2.0 fully.
And Action Plan 2.0 talks about making sure that students graduate college or career ready. 8-year-olds can read at grade level, great principals and teachers, and funding without deficits. Again, all things that I think everyone can applaud. But if you can't get $320 million, what happens to that action plan?
Well, $320 million is money in a system. We're not going to fix the system. We're going to fix schools individually, one at a time. And so what we'll do as we get resources and we have powers that will impact children's outcomes even without dollars. We can renaissance a school and put in new principals and new teachers without additional dollars. And if we've chosen the right school leader and they choose the right team, those children are going to do better than they did the previous year. But I'm not about, and I know Dr. Height's team is not about incremental and marginal change. We want transformative change. We want 100% good schools. That is our goal. We believe it is entirely achievable. And so while we're going to improve outcomes over the next few years, we have to look to a full implementation of that plan to meet our goal of 100% good schools.
We're almost up in a break here, but can that be done with $2.4 billion? I mean, is it a matter of sort of reallocating the funds that you know you have?
Well, that's part of the discussion that we're having with the teachers and principals and other represented groups in the school district.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Bill Green is our guest in this hour of Radio Times. Just became the new chairman of the School Reform Commission here in Philadelphia. He spent six years on Philadelphia City Council, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Any questions or comments that you might have, do give us a call. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Many ways to contact us here on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Mendelsohn Club of Philadelphia continues its 140th anniversary season with The Sound of Spirit, Peart Hyden, featuring Peart's music from the recent Grammy-winning album Adam's Lament, as well as Hyden's Mass in Time of War, Sunday, February 23rd at 4 p.m. at the Church of the Holy Trinity, featuring the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia and soloists Barbara Barry, Jennifer Beatty, Roy Hagee, and Brandon Sadell. Tickets available at M as in Mendelsohn, C, chorus.org, mcchorus.org.
Starting in the 1950s, African Americans on the radio began changing the country.
We were the little engine that could, and we were going to fight the big guys.
They had a sound you couldn't hear anywhere else.
Ooh, tiddly off, let's make way for the jock. Look, pull all through, later, Gator. Gotta cut. Hello there, Douglas.
I'm Kenny Gamble. Tune in for Going Black, the legacy of Philly Soul Radio.
Saturday afternoon at 2 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, Vladimir Putin has been hobnobbing with world leaders, confabbing with Team USA. Did Putin win a gold at the Games? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking with Bill Green, just sworn in as the chairman of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission earlier this week. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What is your relationship, or what do you want your relationship with Superintendent Height to be?
Well, I have a, I think, very nice personal relationship with Dr. Height. He and his wife and Margie and I have gotten together and had dinner and discussed the potential of my even attempting to come here. And so we stay close in touch by phone. We try not to surprise each other. But the reality is Dr. Height is the educator. He has the plan to run the school district. And I view my job in my official capacity to support him in every way that I can in that effort.
I mean, the School Reform Commission is a kind of school board. It's what happened when the state took over the district.
Right.
What's your relationship with Governor Corbett?
Collegial. I don't know the governor as well as I know Dr. Height, but we have had some great conversations. I know that he feels strongly, as I do, that education is a civil rights issue, that we have to deal with the issue of solving the urban education problem in high poverty districts. And I think that, you know, once we can put in place a platform that is going to allow district schools to be competitive or have the chance to compete with charter schools like Mastery, Aspira, and others, then I think we can see that when people see that the money that comes to Philadelphia School District is going for instruction, going to the things that, based on data and evidence, are going to improve outcomes, then I think we'll be in a different situation when we go to Harrisburg and City Council also.
But what do you think every school, every classroom needs in order to succeed?
Well, every school needs a great school leader. That's the number one thing. But they need so I'm answering this question in the context of urban schools with high poverty as opposed to every school. So they need longer school days and they have longer school years. They need a constant feedback loop for teachers. They need so that teachers are can improve. So you need continuous improvement plans for teachers. Very importantly, you need to have a climate and culture of respect among students, between teachers and students, and principals and teachers and students. Because if you don't have the proper climate and atmosphere in a school, there's going to be no learning going on. It's going to be moving children from one classroom to another. Those things are extraordinarily important. And so, you know, you need a few more adults than we have in most schools today.
Meaning more staff?
More staff.
More people.
Right.
More counselors, nurses,
well,
teachers,
mostly we need, if you're going to, you want to fill back in a way that is going to lead to outcomes and better outcomes. And so you're going to want to put in place support systems for teachers that help them be successful first and then sort of build out the rest of the model.
Do you care in Philadelphia if a school is a public school or a charter school? Does it matter to you?
I don't have a preference for a delivery method as long as that delivery method is providing quality outcomes for children.
So if it's a charter, it's a public, it doesn't matter to
you? I think,
you.
Yes, my view of that is that whether it's a charter school or a traditional public school or whatever it is, that the standards applied to both should be the same. So whether if you're a charter school and you're not performing and that the SRC has not been good about this because it's their responsibility, mm-hmm. you should be closed down. But if you're a public school and you're not performing, you should also, there should be a corrective action plan for that school that is mandatory. So the first thing we really have to do as an educational community involving all the stakeholders is agree on the baseline of facts that what do we have today and what is it to make the schools successful? Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Height has put that out in his action plan, but when you apply that on a school by school basis, we want to do things that data and evidence says are will make us successful. Data and evidence says class size doesn't really matter if you have the other things in the schools that you need, like the teacher support system, the feedback loop, the extra time with children, et cetera. And so we have to agree on what the data and evidence says if we're going to move forward together to solve this problem, or we'll be fighting for the next 5 years. And so I really hope that we can engage in that dialogue over the next few months with, you know, the people who – the advocates, the unions, and the parents who really have the most – other than the students, have the biggest stake in this.
But are you saying that if a public school is underperforming, that public school should be closed down? Children move to a better, different school?
Of course. I mean, why shouldn't that? Why shouldn't the standards that we want to apply to charters apply to public schools? We if a school is below a certain performance level, something needs to be done. We need to either replace the principal and all the teachers. We need to renaissance that school, so bring in a charter operator, or we need to close it and give those children a better option. We have schools that are, you know, 18%, 24%. Reading and math on the PSSAs. That's outrageous. There was a 1983 Department of Education study, and I think this is from that, and it basically said if another country did to our children what we are doing in our educational system, we would consider it an act of war.
Mm.
Well,
that was 1983.
That was 1983, and we're still doing it 30 years later.
There are good schools in Philadelphia.
There are great schools in Philadelphia.
And I have to say, because we've done lots of shows, about the Philadelphia School District, and we get a lot of angry, complaining, criticizing phone calls. And I just want to make sure our listeners understand that there are schools that are doing a fantastic job in this city.
As I said when we began, there are a lot of great schools and a lot of great teachers, and I don't have to spend as much time on them.
but the question is, can you take those models that work, and try to figure out how to recreate that across the city?
Well, we have to take the successful models from the charter world and from successful schools. A lot of the successful schools in Philadelphia have very active, engaged families in the schools. They have a much lower poverty rate than the average Philadelphia school. There are magnet schools. There are schools in neighborhoods where the families have more money, et cetera, or transitioning neighborhoods on the way up. There's sort of a natural support system in those schools that already exists, like in the suburbs. So really we have to look at the models where it's the same basis. There's high poverty in a school, yet they're achieving great outcomes. Mm.
Those schools exist?
They do. And they exist in the district, and they exist in the charter world. There are more of them in that world.
I read that you were very taken with filmmaker M. Night Shyamalan's analysis, I guess, of what works in schools. And he says, identifying great teachers and removing roadblock teachers, promoting instructional leadership, providing consistent feedback on teaching practice, reducing school size, not class size, but school size, adding more time, longer days, longer years. I mean, that sounds exactly what I just said, doesn't it?
Yes.
was it him saying these things that got you thinking perhaps we can apply this to Philadelphia?
No. I mean, it's what Mastery does today, for example, and that model exists in Philadelphia. But what Knight did, which is phenomenal, is sort of take, I don't know how many years, 30, 40, 50 years of educational research focused in schools with high poverty and said, what works in a school? He didn't say what works in a system, what works to change a school district. He said what works in a particular school. And all of those things you mentioned, the important point that he's making is you can't have one, two, or three of those things. You have to have all of those things for a school to be successful. And so in all the data and analysis that his team did for him, what they've concluded, and I fully subscribe to it, is that you have to have all of those things present for success. And that's why what we're talking about with the teachers is so important, because if we can't achieve those things in our public, traditional public schools, then we're not going to succeed, and we have a responsibility to the families to say, we have to provide you with other educational options besides the traditional public school.
And that's Bill Green. He's the new chairman of the School Reform Commission here in Philadelphia, chosen by Governor Tom Corbett to sit on the five-member group that basically oversees the Philadelphia School District. We're talking about some of his ideas and vision for education in the city. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear from you, especially if you have a child in the school district. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. What do you suggest be done with, let's call them, underperforming teachers? I mean, I went to school, I had good teachers, I had mediocre teachers, I had some really lousy teachers as well. I'm sure you did as well.
And I don't know where you went to school, but if you went to a and I don't know what your family situation was, but assuming you had family support, your family made up for the failure of that teacher.
And yep, family teachers.
That often doesn't exist in schools with high poverty, and so we can't afford to have subpar teachers or teacher roadblocks in Knight's term. And so you have to basically replace 5 to 8% of your teachers every single year. Those that are, you know, people should get 3-4 years to learn to become a teacher. But after that point, you have, the district has to admit that not every teacher should be a teacher.
And do we have the kind of tools, criteria that we can make that statement or that analysis?
Well, we have to have a different measurement system for teachers. And I want to say, I want to reward teachers for being excellent teachers, but there should be a certain outcome for failing to be a good teacher, and today that doesn't happen. And that's, you know, I'm sorry you weren't cut out to be a teacher. Please try. You know, we're sorry. I don't know what else to say about that.
Let me get to, it looks like Frank from Center City, Philadelphia, to join our conversation. And Frank, go ahead, you're on Radio Times. Go ahead, Frank, you're on Radio Times. Yes, no? We have a tweet from Salma. Standards should be the same for charter schools and public schools. Do you agree with that?
I did just say that, yes, indeed. I think everybody should be on a level playing field, and we should agree on the measurement criteria that we apply to both, and they should be applied absolutely equally.
Well, we know the district pays something, $700 million a year for charter schools.
It's a big part of our budget.
It is. And one of the concerns / complaints is that while a student may go to a charter school, that doesn't necessarily reduce the cost for the public school, because you still have to turn your lights on. You still have a classroom with maybe not 25 students, but you have 24.
That's right. And so that's why we have to become far more nimble as a district in terms of cutting our costs as we lose students and doing projections and planning in a far more sophisticated way than has been done in the past. And I know Dr. Height and his team, who, you know, came in the middle of a financial crisis and only 18 months ago, are working on allowing us to be far more nimble. But it's also why it makes sense to close entire failing schools, to reallocate those students and get rid of the cost of that building, et cetera, as opposed to which would allow you to shift students to keep 25 in every class as you are expanding, charter seats.
Do you envision closing more schools? Superintendent Height did close some, and children were moved from one school to another. Do you see that in the future, and even as a cost saver?
It is a cost saver. I think it's I can't remember how much exactly, 20 to 25 million to the district this year to have done that. And the reality is state law mandates that we grant charter licenses. We've exempted ourselves from that for a little bit. That may not last at the General Assembly level, our ability to exempt ourselves from that. And so we have no choice but to be more nimble. And the current plan by the superintendent and his team is to get us to 85 to 90% capacity, and we're still in the mid-70s. So that certainly is an unfortunate part of the school district's future. But we hope we're not going to do Dr. Hyde has made the decision not to do any school closings next year, but we so that we can take our time and do planning and be very sophisticated and sensitive to the communities where that would happen the following year.
Let me try Frank again. Frank from Center City, Philadelphia. Frank, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. No, looks like we have some kind of some kind of technical problem here. But are you saying that the school reform or the district or the school reform commission should lift that exemption on charters, that charters should be that the city should continue to open the door to more charters?
I think once it's all about agreeing on measurement standards, and so if a charter operator is above performing better, let's just say, than 85% of city schools, and I pulled that out of the air. That's not
right.
What Dr. Hyde's plan is. I don't know exactly what the metrics should be, but then that charter operator should be allowed to expand unconditionally until they're below 85% or whatever the number is. And with respect to new charter operators, we are constrained by our dollars at the moment. And at least for next year, we're not planning to we're not going to be able to be as nimble as we need to be. Mm-hmm. So while, as I said, I think we have a responsibility to give parents alternative educational options if we can't get the we'll call them the work rules we need in our traditional public schools. We just don't have the resources to expand it broadly next year.
What about cyber charters, which have I have to say that the track record on cyber charters is not particularly impressive. Is it time to look at their track record?
Well, we are, and so in order to deal with the cyber charters, we have. The school district has started its own cyber charter school so that it can get the resources for itself that are going to these cyber charter operators. So if you're in a cyber charter in the city of Philadelphia, please look at the district cyber charter school. It is excellent, and you can transfer there for next year, and that will mean a lot to your fellow Philadelphia students.
Well, let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation, hopefully fix the phone system that we have here. And Bill Green is our guest. He spent 6 years on the Philadelphia City Council and now is the new chairman of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission. And we've been talking about some of his ideas for education here in the city of Philadelphia and some of the challenges facing him and the district. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I do suggest you also send us an email, or perhaps do send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol use? The Family Training Program works with parents of children aged 12 to 25 to help them maintain control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia and the Main Line by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2. Or online at IamConcerned.org.
I'm going to do these 4 cons to get us out of this. Not just me, but us.
American Hustle has been nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director for David O. Russell. He was also nominated for Best Director for his 2 previous films, Silver Linings Playbook and The Fighter. We talk with David O. Russell on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Bankers After Hours.
What do these 2 people have in common, Ted?
I'd say they're big titans on Wall Street.
No, they're future cellmates.
Inside the new face of banking, millennials confront the finance industry and discover it's not for everybody. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and if you're just joining us, our guest is Bill Green. He's the new chairman of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission, chosen by Governor Tom Corbett to sit on this five-member group overseeing the Philadelphia School District. And I think we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. But I do suggest, if you have any questions or comments, send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I'm looking at an editorial in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It says, Bill Green is a difficult man for a difficult job. And I have to say, in preparation for the show, I was reading a lot of articles about you and your time on city council, not known for patience, needs to be more of a conciliator as head of the School Reform Commission. Do you think you have the personality for the job?
In my 6 years in city council, I've passed 78 substantive bills, including creating the Office of Property Assessment to move that away from the BRT, which has been tried by Joe Clark. I eliminated taxes on private investment funds. I lowered business taxes by $150 million in a very, very liberal, progressive, we'll call it, city council.
Right.
I don't think I should change what's working.
Well, and the reason I ask is that, and as you said, you have a meeting tonight. Already 37 people have signed up to speak at the meeting. You have to deal with a lot of different interest groups and individuals. You've got the mayor, you've got the governor, you've got your fellow commissioners, you've got the city council, you've got parents, you've got teachers, you've got the union.
Sure, and what people don't, I guess what people react to is when they ask me a question, I tell them what I really think, and I don't tell them what I think they want to hear, and that's very different in the world of politics, and I find that extremely effective, although people might be surprised by it to begin with. I think that's what we should expect from our appointed and elected officials.
So you're not going to sugarcoat anything?
Well, you know, every time I've run, I have been the number one vote getter in city council at large. So it seems to be, it seems to be working.
Do you think the business community, universities in this city, that they can and should do more to help the district? Help schools?
The chamber is very, very engaged, and I think it started when David Cohen was chair. I think his inaugural address to the chamber was about assisting in education. They've created some scholarships, and they're very actively engaged in helping the school district in the city up in Harrisburg, where they might have more influence with, say, Republican senators and assembly members than we might. And so I think that there is a commitment to do that. And since I was confirmed by the Senate, I've received calls from Rob Wunderling, who's head of the chamber, who has made several suggestions about the resources that they could bring to bear to help us. And so I'm looking forward to working with them.
How about universities? There are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them, and I'd love to see universities do what Penn has done with Sadie Alexander. I know Drexel is committed to certain schools in its area and is increasing its involvement, but it would be awesome to see St. Joe's and LaSalle and Holy Family in the Northeast and others just sort of pick a school and focus on that and help us with it. I think several years ago the mayor had conversations with them about it, and I just haven't looked into where that stands.
There's been some attention paid. We actually did a show recently on this about, for lack of a better word, professional, educated families, couples beginning to have children and then making that decision about, do I send my child to school in Philadelphia or do I move to the suburbs where I can probably get a better school? Maybe they can't. How are you going to keep those folks in the city? And these are people that have jobs, pay taxes, are a very important part of the city.
Yeah, well, Pew did a study of millennials, which is probably what you're referring to, and
yes.
56% of them said that they do not believe we have a good school system in the city of Philadelphia. Unfortunately, that's borne out by the evidence. As a system, there are lots of good schools, and we have to improve schools one at a time, and we will. And so that's the most important thing I want them to know, that we will improve our school system. There will be quality educational options for your children when you decide to have them. So stick around.
When you say improving schools one at a time, is there a kind of triage system? I mean, do you take the lowest performing schools and work on them, or do you do the ones that are, you know, working their way to the top but they haven't made it there yet?
I think you would have to do a combination of all of those things. You said something earlier that I'd like to comment on. You said
sure.
We're discussing my ideas. Really, none of these ideas are mine. Even what was in my policy paper was research done by my staff that brought together data and evidence about how to succeed. So just to be clear, I'm not coming up with ideas. I'm trying to apply evidence to improve outcomes.
Fair enough. I'm going to try the phones again. Fingers crossed. We have Catherine from Upper Darby. And Catherine, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
I had 27 years experience teaching in different kinds of schools, but I taught in Philadelphia at two different periods. And some of the schools, at one point I was substituting, so I saw good schools and bad schools. And I agree that the most important factor in one particular school is the principal. But I also think that nobody is saying what is obvious to me, that teaching in Philadelphia is, or any big city, is extremely difficult.
Sure.
In so many of the poorer neighborhoods. And when teachers are expected to do more for less money, it's really hard to attract good teachers. And I can tell you, going back to 1960, I knew graduates of college with very good credentials who refused to even apply in Philadelphia.
Well, Catherine, let me take your point, because it's a good one. First, it underscores something that certainly is true and I guess needs to be said. Go ahead, Bill Green.
Well, Catherine, I completely agree with you. Our biggest challenge is what Dr. Height and his team refer to as talent acquisition, and that applies at the principal level and the teacher level. And hopefully, what we'll be able to attract if we have a different way of working in each individual school with a great principal leader, hopefully, we'll be able to attract the energy of our young people in this country who truly want to and believe that this is the most important issue facing our nation, that it's a national security issue. And there's a lot of people with that kind of energy. And then hopefully we can retain them after they come for a few years, because if they're successful, they should be rewarded and incentivized for that success.
Catherine, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I was reading that the pay differential between Philadelphia and the suburbs is something like 19 or 20%. So sometimes those decisions are just money decisions.
Sure. It's the pay differential at the beginning of a career is very, very similar, but over time, mm-hmm. it varies significantly. And so if you are a good, successful teacher in Philadelphia and you have a family, it's not your mission. You have a responsibility to go apply to mm-hmm. Bucks County or somewhere else, you know, unfortunately.
Let me see what looks like Bill from Mount Airy has to say. Bill, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there.
Whoops,
we seem to have lost Bill. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with the phones, but we will carry on.
I'm grateful.
No, I'm not. I like talking, especially when it comes to education, because as we were talking before going on the air, in my mind, there's nothing more important than education. Let me ask you about this cheating probe. And as we know, I think three principals were fired in January, something like 138 educators are implicated in this investigation that's been going on for some 2 years now. Is there something more you can tell us about this probe?
At the moment, I can't. We had an outside law firm do an analysis of all of this for us, and we are going to have to make decisions about consequences for people engaged in that. You know, my view is, and I don't think the world is this simple, but my view is if you engage in cheating, you shouldn't work for the school district.
Right. As simple as that.
Yes.
We have an email from Krista. You mentioned, this is to you, you mentioned earlier that not every teacher was made to be a good teacher and that there should be a better system to weed out bad teachers. Why is it so hard to get rid of bad teachers? Why is teaching different from other industries and that teachers don't have to, in that teachers don't have to prove themselves successful and effective in order to keep their jobs? I mean, I guess the idea is like the rest of industry, you're evaluated on how well you do.
Right. So less than 1% of Philadelphia teachers are rated unsatisfactory. The principals do those ratings, satisfactory or unsatisfactory. And so part of putting in place a good school leader is having them accurately assess the people that work in that school. We have tenure in the state of Pennsylvania, which is in our constitution, which means that if you're going to fire a teacher after I can't remember whether it's 2 or 3 years, some period of time, that you have to do so for cause. And so we
for
have
reason.
For reason. So we have not devoted the resources as a school district to terminating poor performing teachers. And we absolutely have to do it because it improves outcomes for children. And with a new measurement system coming in from the state, there will be many more gradations of that, and there will also be a principal measurement system next year, which will grade them based on how well they do their teacher assessments. If everybody's satisfactory, the principal will get a lower rating. So,
do you think there should be something between satisfactory and unsatisfactory? I mean, some gradations in the middle that can...
There are. So they're going from a 2-level satisfactory, unsatisfactory, to a 4-level system, but with only still one category being unsatisfactory.
I'm going to try the phones again. Let's try Katie from Center City, Philadelphia. And Katie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask Mr. Green why he thinks eliminating the protections for children that exist in the teacher's contract would positively affect outcomes, such as eliminating the class size caps or eliminating the requirement for counselors or nurses or librarians. How does that help children?
The idea of eliminating or reducing these positions, how does that help children? Is that your question,
yes,
Kate?
Yes, that's what the school district would like to do.
Well, let's
those are two of the things the school district would like to do. There are many more things, but the answer to your question is because we have to have the flexibility to run the schools competing with charter schools so that and to have all of the things that Marty read off earlier that are in the action plan and Knight's book apply in our schools, and so we need complete flexibility. One of the things you mentioned is classroom size. Every study I've seen that are sort of properly done studies demonstrates that classroom size does not matter as long as there are the necessary supports in the administration of a school to support the teachers in doing their jobs. And so we have to make our decisions based on evidence and data, and the mm-hmm. contract reflects what the evidence and data suggests.
Do you think there are too many administrators in the district? That administration is a little too top-heavy?
I don't know. There were significant cuts in the central office of the district, and I know it was very painful for them, and I don't have a view on that at the moment. Certainly, there are probably not enough administrators in schools.
As we know, as a result of the cutbacks last year, counselors cut in schools, nurses, aides, even supplies. Will there be an effort to try to get more, for instance, more counselors back in the schools? Some schools, 1,000 children with 2 counselors, which is, of course, just an impossible ratio.
It's an impossible task. I think with benefits and everything, the average counselor makes $114,000 a year. The average assistant principal makes $180,000 a year, and that's part of what makes it so hard to put counselors in. You could probably have some great counselors for 50 or 60.
Are there great counselors for 50 or 60?
Sure, yeah, and there's people. you know, we're constrained in terms of the number of resources we can put back into a school because of existing contracts.
I read your children didn't go to public school. Do you think that's something you're going to have to explain or defend? Or perhaps I'm asking you to
no,
do that.
Yeah,
now.
No, I'm I made the choices for my children that I think will give them the opportunity for the most productive, successful life that they can have, and I think that that is every family's responsibility to do for their child, and I now want to do it for 200,000 children.
The idea of choice? I mean, that's what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that essentially, if we're going to tax people to provide a public school system, we have a moral and ethical obligation to actually provide a system that allows people to have an opportunity in their life. And today we're pushing people through a system, or children through a system, that that will make most of them, we know, not productive citizens in the future because, in part, of the education that we're able to provide them. Bobby Kennedy said, "Time is the fire in which we burn." And that reflects the impatience that you described of mine earlier, but that's true of the children in our non-performing public schools today, and it's not fair.
Well, Bill Green, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times, giving us an hour of your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, the new chairman of the School Reform Commission here in Philadelphia, and there is a meeting tonight. It will be the first in which he presides as chairman. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us, and do stay with us for Hour 2. We'll be right back. And do